You're listening to 101.3 WKZB, Falls Church's only radio station. Next up is interview hour. Stay tuned. Hello, everyone, and welcome to interview hour. This is your host, Lauren, and our first guest on the program today is Garrett Dimpley. And Garrett is a bathroom monitor and hand washing timer here in Falls Church. And so we're so happy to have him. Thank you for your service, Garrett, and welcome to interview hour.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me. That was 25 seconds that you had on that intro.
Yeah.
Pretty good work.
Oh, great.
Under 30 seconds. That can be a life changer.
Explain. How can an introduction change lives?
Say that one more time.
How can an introduction to a program be shorter and a lifesaver?
I'm just saying you only took 25 seconds. So those next 5 seconds you could use to respond to someone who's in cardiac arrest and you could be doing CPR right now.
Okay.
15 chest compressions, 2 big breaths.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's true. We don't have really a lot of need for that on this program.
You never know.
But you never know. You're right.
You never know. I was in the airport a year ago, and, well, more than a year ago, and there was this American Heart Association.
The fibula?
What would you call it even? It looks like an arcade machine, but it was a thing that taught you how to do CPR.
Oh, like a simulator.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it would teach you in the airport how to do it, and it had like a little dummy attached to it and stuff. So anyway, I'm just saying you could learn a useful skill like that in under a minute, and you could save a life, and your efficient introduction was just the perfect thing that
Thank you.
I mean, someone could have been struck by lightning in the studio when the electricity came through some of the equipment, and one of us could be injured, and then you could do CPR.
And I could have a clean introduction as well. So timing is obviously, it has a lot of purposes. Now, you are the bathroom monitor and hand washing timer here in Falls Church.
Yes.
And
in the public restroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In the public restrooms that are by the park.
Okay. I was going to ask if you sort of roamed around the town or if it was in specific, but you are in the pavilion public restrooms.
Yes. So everyone knows there's a big memorial park out behind the Trader Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
And every time there's people in there, I wear a neon vest. So I'm clearly identifiable as staff.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in, and then that's when I start my watch. Which is funny because a lot of people think that the timing of hand washing begins when you turn on a faucet. Well, that's not true. We actually time through when you use the facilities of any sort. You know,
mm-hmm.
you could be changing a baby. You could be using a stall. You could be using just a urinal or something. But that's when it starts, because if you're spending the majority of your time doing the dirty activity, mm-hmm. then when you actually get to washing your hands, and we take the percentage of time that you're using washing your hands, using the restroom,
mm-hmm.
that's what we use to compare. And that's what we say, you should be spending 20% of your time in that restroom washing your hands.
So the clock starts basically as soon as you enter the bathroom.
Yes.
That's interesting because I've always heard that to get a thorough wash, you need to do 2 happy birthdays worth of washing your hands. So you want to wash your hands. That's under the water, or that's with the soap. You know, you wet your hand, you put soap on, and you bubble up, and you do that for 2 happy birthdays, and you want to get every crack and cranny.
Right.
And then rinse it off. But you're saying that the time is actually, that seems like maybe it's not that much. Maybe it's more or less depending on what you're doing.
Well, exactly. That two happy birthdays is assuming that the total happy birthday situation will be a minute, right? That's assuming that it's a minute. And that, what they don't tell you is on the back end, that's actually assuming that you take 5 minutes in the bathroom.
So it's like a recommended calorie intake. You know, it's like, yes, 2,000 is the average, but you may need more or less depending on, you know, your body height or
right.
you know, things right. like that. Okay.
It depends how involved you're going to get in the bathroom.
So it's a presumptive
average. Yeah, if you
average.
Poop for 2 hours, you got to wash those hands.
So how long, if you were in the bathroom for 2 hours, say you just had, you know, you ate something and it really upset your stomach and you're just in the bathroom the rest of the day.
Yeah.
How long should you be washing your hands?
So this is the problem. We get up mm-hmm. to 20% of that is a massive amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
At most, however, we're going to say 10 minutes. At
okay.
most. And that okay. is close to surgeon level of preparation. That's kind
yeah.
of saying you are scrubbing your hands. You should bring some kind of a bottle brush or a hand brush of some kind into the bathroom mm-hmm. to just get under the nails, around that ring. We actually recommend people do take off their rings because even though there's
oh, yeah.
the common conception is that you're going to lose it down the drain, the truth of the matter is a lot of gunk can get caught in the crannies of that ring or underneath
it.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's very interesting. So you would say no more than 10 minutes then?
I would, but we're getting into some suspicious territory there. Because that's saying that you would use the bathroom for 50 minutes, which we've timed people, and on average, it's a lot less than that. So
okay. But, you know, you never know. You never know.
You never know.
Are there protective measures that can be taken in advance? Is there maybe
yes.
hygienic measures that people aren't taking into consideration while prepping to enter a public restroom?
Yeah, one of those is whether or not the public restroom is door open. You know the situation where a lot of times in parks, they just want to air it out
yeah.
or they don't care that you've got to go to the bathroom and it's just open to the wilderness. Well,
mm-hmm.
if there's no door on it, you don't have to spend exactly as long because your hands are going to touch that doorknob and versus not touch that doorknob. When you're not touching the doorknob, there's mm-hmm. a lot that you don't take on. There's a lot of germs that you don't take on.
Yeah.
So you can spend
yeah.
less time that way. The other fact of the matter is, you know, people can use restrooms for a whole variety of things. And we've had people go in who are changing diapers on triplets, and that's a different situation. So if you're changing diapers on triplets, you're going to need to wash your hands longer than somebody who's just peeing.
So it's time versus surfaces touched.
Yes. And there's
wow.
a complicated graph that we have. So mm-hmm. we've used calculus to determine how long that is. And we used a Raymond oh. sum of mm-hmm. under the curve of how long people use the bathroom.
Is that what those graphics are that are printed out and posted on the door of every stall?
It is. In those little clasps, those little metal clasps that hold in
uh-huh.
like announcements and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I was wondering, I did not understand what it was at all. I thought maybe it's some sort of science project or maybe it's an advertisement for, you know, some sort of like SAT prep.
No,
tutoring.
It's me using Excel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
yeah.
So
that was a little complex.
Yeah. So that's behind the hand washing. That's kind of the information behind there. It really doesn't have anything to do with CDC guidelines or recommendations. It's just
okay.
based on my personal research.
Okay. So that's what I was going to ask next because you know, of course, a lot of times people, there have actually been a lot of complaints
yeah.
about you and your monitoring of the bathrooms and hand washing.
Yeah.
And some people say that you are maybe a little extreme. You
yes.
are, you know, maybe you're disregarding like actual government CDC
yeah
guidelines and standards. And there have actually been some complaints from the CDC to the town of Falls Church. Do you have any, what do you say to that kind of criticism?
I think that this is based on my personal experience, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I used to take there's this liquid you can use that simulates germs on your hand because it glows under a black light.
Mm-hmm.
And if you rub that on your hands and then wash your hands and you still have black light, you shine a black light on it and you still have residue on it, you should really have washed your hands longer. Right. So I have a dispenser of that mm-hmm. liquid that I pour on people's hands as they walk in, sometimes a little bit by surprise. And they scream.
Yeah.
They're pretty mad. Mm-hmm. And it's, I tell people, you know, it's just a liquid that shows up under a black light. And then people get even more suspicious. And then sometimes the authorities have to be called.
Yeah, there, you did have to, you were sort of put on a paid suspension.
Yes.
For a few weeks while the police were investigating what the liquid was. And it turned out that it actually was what you were saying it was. But yeah, people did not like that. And I understand that you do not use that. That you do not spray people with that anymore.
No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a voluntary participation where I say, would you like some liquid on your hands that shines under a black light? Because mm-hmm. I'm doing research on cleanliness and how long it takes for people to wash their hands. And usually they say no.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, though, there were those, there was sort of a group of, I guess they were sort of the local college students at the yeah. at the Falls Church Community College, and they actually were taking you up on that, and they ended up painting the walls with the gel.
Yeah, it was very creative.
And they were holding a rave inside the women's room.
Oh, see, I only do this for the men's room because as a man, so they must have gotten somebody who came up to my station to get some for them.
That's exactly what happened. And it yeah. was after the park had technically closed. So it was sort of a problem on a lot of levels, but they were holding a rave, and, you know, that did take some cleaning up to do, but yeah. So, okay. So I guess there's a lot of question too about your sort of origin story. How did you come into this interest in bathroom monitoring, hand washing timing, and all of that?
You see, it started when I was in high school. I was a hall monitor, and mm-hmm. I wore a little cap and sash that said mm-hmm. hall monitor. And I really took that to heart. And sometimes when people would run to the restroom, I would say, you know, that pass is really only good for 10 minutes, right? And they would say, is it? And then I would say, it is. And then I would wait in the hallway for them, and then I would write them up if they took too long. Needless to say, I was actually voted the least liked in my high school class.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I thought we had gotten rid of negative superlatives, but the teachers agreed that they should include that one. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was rough. But I stick by my convictions that right. timing is everything.
And that superlative followed you all the way through high school, right? I think you were voted the class narc your senior year.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. But you didn't get deterred by that, you know, criticism.
No. I see it as important to maintain regulations and efficiency, and we all obey rules for a reason, you know?
Right. Are there any you know, changes that you've implemented? Like, do you think that you've made some effective change in maybe the way people approach time management in bathrooms since you've been in this position?
Well, you see, my parents were chess computers. And so they...
They were chess computers?
My parents were chess computers.
They were, like, humans that computed the times? Or what do you mean by... But I'm sorry. I guess I don't mean to get hung up on this.
I was raised by chess computers.
You were raised by actual computers, like the technology.
Yeah. So what happened was.
All right.
What happened was.
Uh huh.
I'm just laughing because nobody believes this story when I tell
it. I'm sure this is something that you've, you know, heard all reactions to, but
yeah, but so what happened was I was born to mm-hmm. to human people. Okay. And then I was entered into an experiment where they would, it was artificial intelligence. The question was, could AI raise children?
Mm.
And they brought in some chess computers. And mind you, one of chess computers' biggest functions is to time how long it takes people to take their turns.
Right.
And they implemented their own strategy. So you could control what level of computer player you wanted to face off against. Did it know the Sicilian defense? Did it know to castle queenside at important times? Could it capture pieces en passant using pawns? It was all important information, but it wasn't exactly child rearing. But anyway, so what they taught me was time is important. And rules are important, and that's what mm-hmm. they instilled in me.
And it sounds like they also taught you that a lot of big decisions can be made mm-hmm. within a small period of time, like kind of going back to the time management aspect of doing things quickly and efficiently.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think before we got sidetracked by that, I think I asked, have you seen any change made, you know, by the general population since you've taken this position on?
Yeah, a lot of people avoid using the bathroom is what I've discovered.
Oh, interesting.
A lot of people now, just use the woods in the park now.
Oh, okay.
Which is bad because there's ticks. You wouldn't want to.
Well, there's probably a lot of problems with that. I mean, the ticks are certainly one, poison ivy, another big issue. But I think also just sort of the hygiene of the area, you know, of the, yeah. the grounds can't be great for that.
No.
And that seems to be a pretty big rule that they're breaking. Are you formulating an approach to address that issue and maybe yes. reverse it?
Yeah, so I've actually, desperate times call for desperate measures.
Sure.
Sometimes you have to sacrifice your queen in order to put that king in checkmate. So I've taken it upon myself to create a camouflaged outfit where I will wait
uh-huh.
with an air horn.
Oh, no.
And I will wait for someone to go to use the bathroom, and then I will blare at them with an air horn and say, go use the public restroom right now. And then they'll run okay. in.
And are you wearing like a camo or are you wearing like a ghillie suit? Like how camouflaged are we talking here?
Oh, I created a sod suit that okay. I will blend into the grass in the surrounding area.
I see. Okay. So it is sort of like a ghillie suit in that you're very texturally camouflaged.
I don't know what that means.
What ghillie suit is one of those camouflage things that hunters wear where they look like they're covered in vines and grass. And they're very terrifying. And I think a lot of people have mistaken hunters in ghillie suits for Sasquatch or his ilk.
Oh, Bigfoot.
That's what the non-believers of Bigfoot say. People are seeing if it's not an outright hoax, they think they're just mistaking a hunter, you know, who's trying to hunt,
you know, possible.
Something. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say Bigfoot doesn't exist, but I definitely think that that probably happened. So you are effectively wearing a three-dimensional camouflage outfit. And you're waiting until they're about to commit the crime of public defecation or urination.
Mm-hmm.
How close do you let them get to actually relieving themselves?
It's really just when they're going alone into the woods, because that's what I suspect they're going to do.
So you don't wait until they're like unbuttoning their pants or anything. You just see someone entering the woods.
Like, oh, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Also dialogue dependent.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I'm sure there's definitely sometimes people who are just going, they want to look for some, you know, morel mushrooms or they're, you know, doing some foraging.
Yeah, and sometimes it's somebody starts whistling.
Oh, you know? Is whistling a thing?
It's kind of an indicator that you're going to pee, yeah. Walking alone by yourself, you know, by yourself into the woods and then whistling to yourself is I'm about to use the bathroom, especially when you approach either a tree or in some case for people who prefer squatting to go behind a bush.
That's interesting because as a woman, I can't say that whistling is a big part of our bathroom ritual.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. It's just what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of nonchalant whistling. It's not like a, it's not a particular melody. It's just do 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 that kind
of
whistling.
No, I know. I guess I'm just thinking that I wonder if that's more of a man or a male presenting thing.
I don't know.
Because women, we just tend to, I think we have so much more shame with what our bodies do that we want to be as quiet and as unnoticed as possible.
Oh.
But, you know, I think you're right. I think like in sort of TV and everything, there is sort of like, that does seem true. Like there is sort of this characteristic of a man going like, do-do-do, like unzipping the fly back to the camera.
Yeah.
You know,
to and the they camera? Are,
well, like on TV, you know, they're standing away from you. But,
yeah.
So, okay, well, that's very interesting.
Yep.
And how have you, do you change locations when you're doing these sort of woodland stakeouts, you know?
Or for sure.
Do you find that there's one area that people tend to prefer?
Yeah. It's kind of diagonal to where the bathrooms are. I think they're trying to get away as far away from me as possible.
Oh, okay.
Or far away from the bathroom as possible.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that must be challenging for you because I can see how you would need to sort of be in two places at once.
Yeah, which is incredibly difficult. But I'm hiring, so if anyone wants to join
as
an enforcer, just let me know.
Well, I would love to hear more about this because you have been a one man act for quite a while now. And you aren't. Are you officially on the payroll of the Falls Church, the town of Falls Church, or? I know you were campaigning to become a paid position.
I was, and that was declined by.
Okay, city so still no luck.
Council, yeah.
As
my parents would say, checkmate. You lose.
So you've given up on trying to get paid for this.
Yeah, but my parents would also say, play again.
I see. So you haven't.
I try.
The mission hasn't defeated you.
No.
You're still playing the game.
That's
but
right.
But you do know when, you know, you've been defeated by a certain opponent, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That sort of stick-to-itiveness is always admirable. And that's why we love to have folks on the show, just to show the listeners that, you know, you shouldn't give up. Okay, so you are hiring. What are you looking for in an assistant? What would the position be called? And what qualifications are you looking for?
I'm looking for someone who really has the patience that you need. Mm-hmm. Somebody who likes the rules for the rules' sake.
Okay.
A lawful alignment, as you might say, in Dungeons & Dragons. Somebody who thinks rules were not meant to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe somebody who has a similar background to me where their parents were strict and inhuman, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Do you think it's interesting that you refer to your parents as strict as and inhuman, because inhumane has also been a term that has been thrown around when people have been complaining about you
in the
bathrooms. Yeah.
Look, I am just here to make sure that people are being sanitary, that they are obeying the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that we've got a clean, healthy environment for everyone.
Yeah. And I think overall, those are good things. And I think people appreciate that. I think everyone No one has complained about the hygienic state of the restrooms since you started.
No.
The raccoon infestation.
Anyone has used them, is the thing.
Hardly anyone has used them, but I will also say that there have not been any raccoons in there.
No.
In the pavilion restrooms.
That's right.
The paper towels are always replenished and available. You know, they've never looked better, I guess, is what I will
say.
Thank you. So you are looking for an assistant, and will this be someone who assists you? What will the position be? How much will it pay? I guess there's just, you know, if you wanted to advertise this a little bit.
Pay is an interesting word.
Okay.
It depends a lot on whether or not I get compensation or people participate in the experiment or.
Oh, okay. So, negotiable?
Negotiable.
And what would the title be? Would they be an assistant to you?
Yes.
Like an assistant to the bathroom monitor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll pretty much be limited to that, with maybe some potential to, depending on you know, where that person lives, maybe going to a restroom near a different part of Falls Church, and maybe we can kind of divide and conquer.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So
as happens when you separate, you know, half of your opponent's pieces away from the king, when you isolate the king, sometimes you can approach from multiple angles.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially bishops that are hard to predict because they run along the diagonals and a lot of people don't see them.
Much like where people go to relieve themselves in the woods.
Much like that.
Well, Garrett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Garrett Dimpley, the Falls Church bathroom monitor and hand washing timer. We will be taking a short break and we will be right back with another interview. All right, welcome back to Interview Hour. Our next guest on the program today is Michael Hauser. And Michael is one of the latest therapists to practice prance therapy.
Yes.
And, you know, this is something I feel like it's catching on, or, you know, you're hearing more and more about it, but you are the first one here in Falls Church. Can you tell us, Michael, about prance therapy? Let's start with what it is exactly.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So prance therapy is a slow, deliberate, wonderful exercise where you embrace the connection that your body has to your mind. Anytime your body feels at ease, your mind is going to feel more at ease. So we put on some gentle music, Claire de Lune, for example. And we take a bunch of semi-transparent scarves of all different colors. Each person will take one. And then we move about the room in a pranceful motion. And for some folks, that can mean one thing. For some folks, another thing. Just kind of depends on each person's ability and comfort level. But I like to think of prancing personally for me as almost like making an arch with your legs.
Yeah.
You will step over as though you were stepping over an arch. And it takes on a leaping motion.
Like it's almost like a skip, but instead of swinging, you know, your knee, like switching legs in the skip.
Yes.
You know, it's like a one leg forward skip, you know,
that's
where.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I always think of too. Like when, you know, I was a child and we pretend to be riding horses.
Okay. Yeah.
Sort of that movement with our legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. And people find it's centering.
Yeah.
It's calming.
Now, I'd love to hear more about the scarves because
sure.
Now, and I do like that, you know, this, if you can't do that particular prance, the sort of the traditional prance,
you can modify,
you can modify it for your comfort level. Now how do you incorporate the scarves into a prance?
So have you ever seen rhythm or rhythmic gymnasts or mm-hmm. who have kind of those yeah, ribbons?
The ribbon dancing.
So some people take it to mean that, while others, it's almost like you have a handkerchief while you're dancing. So you move your arms while you prance.
Mm-hmm.
And one really nice thing you can do is throw up the scarf, because they're so lightweight mm-hmm. that they will pause in the air for a second and you can pick them up again on their way down
oh.
and wave them around.
Mm-hmm. And I do love it. I did take one of your prance therapy classes. I did the group class,
yes.
which there was, you called it a group class. There were only two of us yes. taking the class.
Yeah.
And I'll say it was a little bit more emotionally intense than I was anticipating.
Yeah. So let, yeah.
I was sort of thinking that, oh, we're just going to skip around. It'll be some good cardio. There will be some fun music. I wasn't anticipating the amount of crying.
Yes. I was about to say, yeah. was it because I cried in the middle?
It was primarily your crying that I was yeah. startled by.
Yeah.
Because I was, I mean, I felt at ease. I did get my heart rate up a little bit, which was really good. You know, I did have a little bit of lower back pain the next day, but that's just because I'm, you know, getting older and I don't have a child's body anymore. But I wasn't anticipating the sort of fetal position rocking and sobbing.
Yeah, so I think that people get connected a lot to some of their past memories when they prance, because it is such a childlike
mm-hmm.
action.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it conjures my music class when I was, in kindergarten.
Okay.
I had a teacher named Mrs. Horowitz who was probably around 85 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the same exercise where we would dance around with our scarves. And when she was explaining to me the instructions, I was looking at her and she said, "Shut your trap. You're going to catch flies."
Oh, were you a mouth breather as a child?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she pointed it out. And then from then on, it started a pattern of her kind of belittling me.
Oh.
Which she died not that long after, because she was 85. But
I was going to say, that's still kind of old to be still in teaching kindergarten. I mean, not to be ageist in any way.
Well,
but
it was just music. It was just music oh. class. She wasn't a kindergarten teacher. She was just teaching music.
But still, I feel like most teachers don't hang in that long. I think a lot of people hope to retire by 85.
But anyway, it was a traumatic memory, and yeah. that's what it brings me to every time I imagine it. I did like the exercise. I just thought my teacher had a bad bedside manner.
Now, you did, so you had that traumatic experience as a child. How did you decide to do prance therapy then, and why do you continue to teach it or practice it as... considering the reaction that you get? I mean, you do break down and cry. And I mean, I honestly, like, you, the whole thing sort of came to a standstill. You even turned off the music.
I did. Yeah.
You turned it off. You sat down, you curled into a little ball, and you had like heaving sobs.
Yeah. And, I've switched from using facial tissues to diapers to wipe up my tears, because there's yeah. so many of them.
And I was so worried you were going to suffocate, because you really had your face buried in that diaper for quite a long time. And there is a lot of drool. It was like that. I mean, it was truly one of those sobs that you don't really see adults do too much. and, you know, you turned purple and just like drool was just pouring out of your mouth. I really felt helpless, and I know the other
part. Talk more about what was that like for you?
Well, I felt awkward because I was actually really finding my rhythm with the prancing and the scarf twirling and tossing, and I felt like I was getting some cool, like really interesting maneuvers down with the scarf, where I would throw it up and I would do some like prancing underneath it and then catch it. And then we'll just call the other participant Daryl to keep their anonymity. Daryl definitely wasn't doing the prancing as much. They were just sort of standing there and waving the ribbon sort of in like up and some up and down.
Don't have any rhythm. Yeah.
And it wasn't to the music, but I, you know, he seemed really happy and really kind of finding his groove as well, even though he was just standing and stationary. And so I think we were both very shocked when the music was shut off completely. And you have one of those boom boxes with the buttons that you push down that make loud clicking sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're still using a tape deck.
Yeah, I use a boom box in my class, yeah.
And so you really slammed the stop button down.
Yeah.
And so it was like it turned off and there's a loud click. And I had to turn around to see what was going on because I had found myself in a completely different orientation than what we originated as. And I don't know that Daryl noticed, because Daryl did keep waving his scarf. But
he didn't seem to care very much.
He didn't seem... Yeah. He seemed not fazed by it, is what I would call it. I think...
Well, Daryl is a veteran of my classes.
That's what he told me. Because at one point, when you were inconsolable... I did ask him, I said, Daryl, are we supposed to be doing something? And he goes, no.
Oh, is that what you were saying while I was screaming?
Yes. Yeah. And you had your face buried in a Pampers. And I said, Daryl, what are we supposed to do? Because I know, Daryl, like we did like a little introduction circle when we first started. And Daryl said he'd been doing this for about a year. And I said, Daryl, what do we do? And he goes, oh, this is normal. You know, just keep doing the therapy. And I said, are you sure? Because I think he's hyperventilating, or I think he's going to choke on something. And he said, no, he's got this. This is just part of it. You just have to let him work it out. And I said, okay. And I just didn't feel comfortable going back to the prance therapy.
Yeah.
But that's when I went inside the Trader Joe's to try to get, I bought you some water. And you did throw it. You did throw the bottle across the parking lot. And I should mention, we were in a sort of a blocked off section of the Trader Joe's parking lot.
Yeah. And when I brought out the whipped cream and started just eating huge mouthfuls of it between sobs.
That also terrified me. I do have to say I was very scared that you were going to asphyxiate on that.
Yeah, but I've got it under control. Yeah. So how did you feel, you know, going to shoveling whipped cream into my mouth, screaming? Now, the veins on my neck at that point, I think,
I thought had they reached
new heights.
They were, I mean, I could see your heart beating. That's how I would describe them. They were so pronounced that I could see the pumping, you know, of the vessels. And I think really when you got to the vessels, the veins in your neck looking like they were about to explode, sobbing, you were very, very purpley red in color, the screaming. And then, you know, at that point, the Trader Joe's parking lot was starting to fill up because it was a Sunday morning. And so people were honking and getting mad, and I was starting to panic. I don't think I felt very relaxed, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, that makes sense. I appreciate your sharing that. The experience was, now, that's about the time, about 20 minutes in, when people really start to see themselves and lay bare the memories that they have. And so you and Daryl were probably reaching that point.
Well,
so when I started to dig, what did that remind you of?
When you started to dig into the bucket of whipped cream?
When I took that shovel.
Oh, the shovel.
Just started digging furiously.
I thought you were going to kill us. But again, if it weren't for Daryl being so stoic and just still continuing his prancing therapy by just sort of waving his scarf up and down in the breeze, I was sure we were going to be killed right there in the parking lot.
No.
Well,
I
would hope not, because I've never seen a reaction like this. And I will say I was so I truly had sort of like a mental whiplash is what I would describe it as.
Yeah.
We went from prancing. I was feeling free and childlike. And I was, again, I felt like I had some good, like, exercise endorphins happening.
Yeah.
I was really doing some incredible scarf work.
Mm-hmm.
And I, sort of, like, throwing it up in the air like a little, like a canopy. And then doing some skipping around. And then
it was beautiful. You did a beautiful
and
job.
And it fell down. And it really did. It almost fell like little angel cherubs were sort of lowering
it.
Wow. And yeah. I really was sort of in this whole almost like Fantasia, that part of Fantasia with the centaurs, you know, frolicking.
Oh, while they're on the clouds or whatever.
Yeah, and they're
but,
in that.
But like, I have to
that's
say,
that's where I was mentally. And then the click, the harsh click of the boombox being turned off, the screaming and sobbing. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, I tried to get you water. You threw the bottle of water at me.
Yeah.
And then you started eating whipped cream right out of a tub. And then Daryl was not fazed. So I guess.
Well, Daryl has seen this all before.
That's what he kept saying. He said, this is normal. And I said, Daryl, I think he's going to hurt somebody. He said, no.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. when I was digging for about 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And I finally hit the casket and started to pry it open.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind?
Well,
were you finally reaching that part of your childhood?
Well, okay. Well, so I'll talk you through that. So you're digging a hole. I thought for sure. I said, nope, we're going to be buried here. And it, I knew logically.
In broad daylight, Lauren. In broad daylight.
I was just about to say, logically, I knew it was a Sunday morning at Trader Joe's. And we all know that there's nothing more crowded and busy than a Trader Joe's parking lot on a Sunday morning. And the people in the cars were very mad that you had those little tiny orange traffic cones taking over about 6 parking spaces. But I wasn't sure what to expect because, again, I did not see any of this reaction coming from you. I did not know what to think anymore. Everything had been turned on its head. Then when you were digging, I heard you hit something with the shovel.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, no, it's a water pipe and there's going to be an explosion because, again, we were in the Trader Joe's parking lot.
Right.
I did not expect for there to be a casket.
Right. How does that nonetheless make you feel about your childhood?
Well, a lead line casket at that. I was very surprised. So then all of the felonies and like just the list of crimes that I was going to be in the newspapers and, you know, just that all kind of came into my head. And then when you started prying open the casket, I don't remember anything. I think I just went into sheer panic mode and I don't remember much else after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't, I gotta say, I didn't really go back into childhood thing. I think I was very present in the moment, concerned with you and what was going to happen.
A good perspective
mm-hmm.
to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I finally triumphantly crying with my clothes torn in the middle of the rain, covered in the residue of whipped cream, pulled up a necklace with an amulet on it.
Yeah.
Did any thoughts go through your head? Did that remind you of something that you had you found some inner peace? When I was filthy and ragged and
right, and my your clothes did take on a shredded appearance.
Yeah.
Sort of like a werewolf, you know, like werewolf clothes shred.
Yeah, yeah.
Or sort of like how the Flintstones had sort of jagged edges on their clothes.
Yeah.
It was very much like that.
So your childhood, yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess I don't really think of it as being related to my childhood.
Okay.
I really didn't, I can't say that.
You watched Flintstones as an adult, okay.
Well, I mean, I guess I was just using that as an example. Yes, I did watch the Flintstones as a child. I'll concede to that. But that's about where the similarities ended.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that you going under the parking lot in Trader Joe's, sort of in the garden area, on the periphery, and you described it as raining. I think that was just the water coming down from a water pipe that you hit when you were digging.
Sure, sure.
It wasn't raining anywhere else, just you were in an exploded water pipe. But when you did pry open a lead-lined casket and pulled out an amulet, I think I was just so overcome with panic that I must have fainted or blacked out and just left my body. I really can't remember how that whole thing ended.
Well, it progressed when there were about 100 people surrounding the grave, which was slowly filling with water.
Yeah.
And I was in it
pretty
ragged
quickly.
Because it takes a lot of effort to dig through asphalt. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
And I swallowed the amulet.
Okay. So
when I swallowed the amulet, what did you think?
So you keep asking. So I'll just tell you, the next thing that I remember is sitting on the back of the ambulance, covered in one of those sort of metal blankets that they put around shock victims. And I'm drinking some hot coffee out of a styrofoam cup. And I am covered, I am soaking wet and I am very muddy. And I don't, you know, I don't really remember, but I was just wrapped in one of those metal blankets. And they were treating me for shock. They were giving me cookies to sort of replenish my sugar, my blood sugar levels. And you were nowhere to be found. I heard.
Right.
And I remember.
Because I had run away on all fours.
Okay.
And they tranquilized me. Yeah.
Okay. Because they did say that they had you in the back of an ambulance and they were taking you somewhere where you were going to get some help. I thought, good, because I'm pretty sure that he had, you know, some sort of aneurysm because of just the way that his neck veins were throbbing and the heaving sort of regurgitating sobs that I heard come out of you.
Right.
And then I did ask, how is Daryl? Is Daryl okay? And, of course, you know, again, using a pseudonym for Daryl. And they said, oh, yeah, he's fine. He's still in the parking lot with his scarf doing the prance therapy.
Which he always does after an episode.
And then he went home. He waved to me and said, see you next week. And I said, I don't think so, Daryl, but take care.
Yeah, he has to, on Sundays he prepares lunches for his children for the week.
Oh, he seemed like a good guy.
He was a good guy.
But yeah, so that's all I remember. And so then they were taking my blood pressure and everything. And then once they decided that everything, I started to level out a little bit, you know, and they said, can you stand up without assistance? And I said, you know, when I said yes, finally, they said, well, why don't we bring you home? And I said, okay, thank you. And so they just dropped me off at my place. And that was that. And then, but we had this sort of standing appointment to have you come on and talk about it, because again, this was just last week. And so I did your Sunday morning prance therapy group prance therapy, and then you were going to come on this week and talk about it.
We have another lesson next week if you want to join.
Uh-huh.
It'll be
I'll give a discount. Everyone who uses the code Mrs. Horowitz on the website.
And how do you spell Horowitz? Okay.
What?
How do you spell Horowitz?
Just Horowitz.
Okay.
And if you go to the website and you enter that, you'll get a 15% discount on your first lesson. And so, Lauren, you can use it as well to get your second session.
Uh-huh. And it sounds like you really do need people to sign up because Daryl said that he's usually the only one at the group therapy classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Daryl loves it. I got it. So Daryl, if you
he finds it calming.
Yeah, I've never seen. I mean, he kind of came in a little bit grouchy, a little bit grumpy. But once you started doing the scarf waving, and I guess that also just goes to show that you truly do not need to be able to prance or spin. Can even sit down and do it. You know, if you have mobility issues. Right. You really can find some calm doing this. But Daryl loved it. That's like a normal class. That's something to expect every time what I encountered.
Sometimes we explore something different.
Okay.
You know? Sometimes we explore a math teacher.
Right.
Mr. Rasmussen. Yeah. Sometimes.
So the memory that comes out, and again, it's your memory, not the
client's. Well, I'm hoping that it will incite sort of childhood memories in everyone who participates. And you'll really, the point of the class is not to prance per se. It's to get in touch with that part of yourself that's vulnerable.
I see. Well,
and I do too.
It does. It really does. It seems to really get you to a vulnerable place one way or another.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is all the time we have with Michael Hauser, who again does prance therapy Sunday mornings in the Trader Joe's parking lot. I would say if this sounded like something fun or something that you feel like you could get a lot of something out of, I would say sign up. It was certainly an experience. And that's going to be it for us today on Interview Hour. Everyone, take care. Enjoy the nice spring weather. And we will talk to you again next week. Interview Hour is a completely improvised podcast performed by Lauren Morrell and Peter Narby. If you're enjoying this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe, and tell a friend or two about us. Thanks for listening.